God said, I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board. So God made a farmer.
My administration will be focused on three very important words. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
This man must be a minister, a social worker, a diplomat, a tough guy, and a gentleman. And of course he'll have to be a genius because he'll have to feed a family on a policeman's salary.
America first. America first. We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Because today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another, or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
Hold on to your seats. Buckle up for safety. You are now entering another dimension with the Scott Adams Show.
And that's right. My name is Scott Adams. You're listening to The Scott Adams Show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. I'm joined by Leonora Cravotta. Hello, Leonora.
Hello, Scott.
So our prayers were answered with regard to Ryan Newman and the Daytona 500 crash at the end. Wow. I mean, that was one of the worst crashes I've ever seen in Daytona. And everybody was just worried to death, sick to death about the well-being of Ryan Newman, and it turns out that he has sustained injuries, but not life-threatening injuries, and our prayers were answered.
Thank God, because I was like, my heart stopped when I saw that. So I am so grateful that, you know, as you said, he has injuries, but they're not life-threatening.
Well, Denny Hamlin won second closest Daytona 500 in the history of the Daytona 500, won out with a bang. And it actually came in on a bang. There was a rain delay. And the president, of course, you know, drove the beast around in the beginning of the event that started on Sunday.
Right.
And ended on Monday.
Right, because of the rain.
And the liberals are going crazy over, you know, how many tax dollars were spent on the beast and the flyover with the airplane and all
exactly.
This, that, and the other. And all I'm saying is like $32 million for the Mueller special counsel.
Yeah, well, that's what you got to do. You got to make a point of comparison. Well, we also have some other news. On yesterday's show, I spent a lot of time talking about who qualifies for both the Nevada debate and the South Carolina debate. And during the show, I said that there was not a good chance that Bloomberg or Steyer will qualify for the Nevada debate. But guess what? Bloomberg, in 20 hours before the debate, made the threshold. He had to have be at a certain polling point within four national polls, and he made it. So now Bloomberg will be on the stage in Nevada on Wednesday.
It sounds rigged.
Well, he's buying so many ads. I mean, that's what's going on. Bloomberg and Steyer have gone crazy with their spending. And apparently in Bloomberg's case, it's working because, you know, he's moving the needle. So you'll now see him on the debate stage on Wednesday. But of course, he didn't make himself look all that good when some old footage showed up where he talked about farmers and talked about factory workers and said that in the information age, you would need more gray matter than you needed to be a farmer. And he talks about, you know, planting a seed, and he did this whole demo thing and said, well, you dig a hole and then the plant grows and, you know, and everybody's saying, well, it's not quite that simple. And for him to go off and offend a large percentage of the country is not going to help him very much.
Right. pretty bad stuff. Every time he opened his mouth, it seems like he made a fool out of himself. He tries to act like he's such the elitist. But in the end, he really was the moron sitting in the room with his gums flapping. Here's just a sample of that.
In, you put dirt on top, add water, up comes the corn. Then we had, it's a process. You dig a hole, you put a seed in, you put dirt on top, add water, up comes the corn. Then we had 300, you could learn that. Then 300 years
farming.
Of the Industrial Society. You put anybody the piece of metal on the lathe, you turn the crank and the direction of the arrow, and you can have a job. And we created a lot of jobs.
Such
one
a
point,
moron.
98% of the world worked in agriculture. Today, it's 2% in the United States. Now comes the information economy. And the information economy is fundamentally different because it's built around replacing people with technology. And the skill sets that you have to learn are how to think and analyze. And that is a whole degree level different. You have to have a different skill set. You have to have a lot more gray matter. And we could teach
process. So you have to have more gray matter than a farmer or a manufacturer or some engineer that invents machinery. Okay. Or, you know, like the farmers that have to buy the right equipment, right, invest, work with the banks, do the accounting, you know, worry about the weather, and, you know, also plant the seeds and do all the other things. And then, you
they're
know,
not thinking,
get the sales and the distribution channels all set up.
Well, they're not thinking, according to Bloomberg. All they're doing is digging a hole and waiting for the plant to miraculously grow.
I guarantee you, I about mean, 90% of those Silicon Valley startups in the beginning of this millennial, period of our evolution, those startups that failed left and right, that collapsed the internet, those people could never run a farm.
Right. And running a farm is a huge business. And the skills that you need to, you know, forecast whether your crops are going to grow and all that. Yeah, I'm sorry, that is gray matter. I mean, Mr. Bloomberg, what are you talking about?
So that's Bloomberg talking about how dumb farmers and manufacturers are and how smart Silicon Valley is because he wants their money, number one. Now, here's him talking about death panels and 95-year-olds who get cancer should just die.
Nobody wants to do that. You know, you show up with prostate cancer, you're 95 years old, you should say, go and enjoy, have an ice cream, lead a long life. There's no cure, and you can't do anything. If you're a young person, we should do something about it. Society's not willing to do that yet. So we're going to bankrupt us, and we're not looking at what things.
So he, of course, is pulling all the strings. He's writing all the rules. He's telling you what size soda you can drink. He's telling you how many terms a New York City mayor could run. We all know that a bozo could actually run for the liberal ticket in New York City because we have Big Bird de Blasio that proved it. So it's not a huge feat to be a Democrat billionaire and win a reelection in New York City. And so because he could do it for a third term, they changed the rules. Once again, changing the rules. And here's just yet another Bloomberg
cohort of black and Latino males, age, let's say, 16 to 25, that don't have jobs, don't have any prospects, don't know how to find jobs, don't know what their skill sets are, don't know how to behave in the workplace where they have to work collaboratively.
Don't know how to behave in the workplace, black people and Hispanics. They don't even know what their skill set is. They don't know how to look for
work. Tell that to the black CEOs. I mean, this is a little bit demeaning. And, you know, you go back and you play these things. How is he going to address these comments when he's in a room of people and they're saying, you know, Mr. Bloomberg, how come you said that about black people? How come you said that about Latinos? Why are you attacking farmers and factory people? I mean, again, Bloomberg is everybody's worst nightmare. He is the ultimate elitist. And, you know, he is everything that they tried to say Trump was.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing. I mean, Trump is more the blue collar billionaire because he knows how to talk to people. You cannot be president of the United States and not know how to talk to people.
Absolutely. And, you know, I want to read this one great tweet that I just put out. And it was about NASCAR. And the guy from NASCAR, I don't know if I can find it, right here. He says, not going to lie. This is Clint Bowyer. Okay, he's a NASCAR racer, mm-hmm. Not a very popular one, I guess. But so he says, not going to lie, I had no idea what to expect. The man, he was talking about Donald Trump. The man walked in, shook all our hands, took selfies, and whatever we asked of him. I judge people on how they treat me and others I'm with, and that's why I really appreciated meeting POTUS thanks for coming to Daytona. You know, he lifted everybody's spirits. The guy is just such a rock star, this President Trump. Now, this Bauer guy, there's a picture of him. He's photographed with President Trump. But, you know, you got to hand it to him, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And this is the Democrat leadership. The Democrat leadership is really, you know, kind of out to lunch. And there's a couple of more things I want to share about this Democrat leadership before we move on. Turns out Joseph Mifsud is alive. We're going to talk about
this
that
been
a little
exciting.
Bit. We're going to talk about the coronavirus today. We're going to talk about Jesse Liu and McCabe and Victoria Coates. We're going to talk about all that stuff today. But before we move on from the Democrat Party, there's this little gem.
Because some of those
forget jobs
of the past are just not going to come back. And when somebody says, like the person you just mentioned, who I'm not going to advertise for, that he's going to bring all these jobs back. Well, how exactly are you going to do that? What are you going to do? There's no answer to it. He just says, well, I'm going to negotiate a better deal. Well, how exactly are you going to negotiate that? What magic wand do you have? And usually the answer is, he doesn't have an answer.
So yesterday, Beau, Barack Obama, Hussein, Barry, Satoru, came out with a tweet staking claim that he is to take credit for the Trump economy 3 years later.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that for the first 4 years of his two terms, right, first 4 years of his 8 years in office, he blamed W. Bush for the poor economy that he inherited. And then he took credit for a sustained recovery, but that recovery was horrible. So, of course, you know, Donald Trump blasted him, let him have it, you know, because it was just ridiculous that he would do that, right? I mean, because it's just false claims.
Well, so, what did he actually accomplish
so
those 8 years?
So Donald Trump replies to that because he tweeted this out, right? Mm. He says, did you hear the latest con job? President Obama is now trying to take credit for the economic boom taking place under the Trump administration. He had the weakest recovery since the Great Depression, despite zero Fed rate and massive quantitative easing, meaning he printed more money than any president ever printed mm-hmm. up. That devalued our currency around the globe. Now, best jobs numbers ever. Had to rebuild our military because, once again, just like Dinesh D'Souza predicted in 2012, mm-hmm. Obama's 2016 had our mm-hmm. military completely dwindled, mm-hmm. you know, and that was part of his overthrow of our government.
Yeah.
He says, had to rebuild our military, which was totally depleted, Fed rate up, taxes and regulations way down. If Dems won in 2016, the USA would be a big economic depression and military trouble right now. The best is yet to come. Keep America great. And just want to play one more thing that the other leader of the party that you never hear about anymore, Joe Biden. Joe Biden's been in the news, and apparently, and I have to be honest, I haven't heard this yet, but we're going to go ahead and take a listen. This is where Joe Biden, this is by the Hill. Joe Biden speaks at the Nevada Black Legislation Caucus and kind of channels Hillary Clinton.
You must be getting tired. You must be tired by now. I can hear Sweet Lou all the way over to the last event I was. Where are you, Sweet Lou? Where'd you go? Wait, how could I miss you, man? I tell you. Folks, look. Thank you for having me. I came where I come from, half a woman showing up and asking. And I'm here to do a brief audition for the job. Folks, this is Black History Month, which you all know. But this is a chance for African Americans in the United States to make history again in a way we haven't made before. We're in a situation right now where we've had a couple votes in two states. But 99.9% of the African American community hasn't voted yet, and 99.8% of the Hispanic community, Latino community, hasn't voted yet. The power to determine who the next president of the United States is going to be is in your hands. And it's going to mean you're going to have a great deal of influence no matter who.
Well, what has he done for the black community? What
I
has Trump
can't
done?
Compare, figure out what compare Biden has done for the black community.
Yeah, compare it to, you know, except for his story about Corn Pop.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, so it's interesting, you know, that to see the... to see what's happening in our political atmosphere. But, you know, while they're struggling, the establishment elite, Bernie Sanders is sort of rising.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that is that you have this this arena out in Tacoma where Bernie Sanders apparently, because he was aligned with a band, the Promise or something like that,
mm-hmm.
This band... 17,000 people in this arena. And so what I think that the conservatives are doing is they're trying to promote Bernie and say, look, Bernie's filling up this arena. Bernie's doing that. And they're applying major pressure because Barack Obama, Hussein, we'll call him, Hillary Clinton, and, you know, and even, Bloomberg all can't stand Bernie.
Right.
He's still an outsider.
Right. And you know what they're doing? They're pointing out, they're saying, look at the way Bernie was treated in 2016, and they're doing it again to him. So in a way,
a lot of Bernie supporters support Trump.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So even in a way, Trump is winning over some of the Bernie supporters, because if Bernie does not become the candidate, they're more likely to go towards Trump. If he does not become the Democrat candidate, so he's laying the seeds for that right now, saying, "Look, I defended Bernie."
Now you wanted to today talk about the coronavirus.
Yes, I have a couple of things I wanted to talk about.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot developing.
By the way, we haven't talked a lot about the coronavirus.
Well, we've brought it up a few times here and there, but I want to bring up something, two items related to it. So Apple's shares have slid 3% after the coronavirus warning. Because its suppliers are getting hammered. Now, the shares slid because Apple sent out a warning that they were not going to make their original numbers for the first quarter. And then that also resulted in the Asian markets also had a sliding of their stocks. So, again, we've been talking about the financial consequences with the stock value, et cetera, and that's been something we've talked about periodically. But one article I came across, which is something that I had not heard before, and full disclosure, it is at the American Conservative, but a writer there, Rosemary Gibson, talked about the impact that it will have on pharmaceuticals in the United States. And she cited a statistic that I had not heard before, that 80% of the components that go into U.S. drugs come from China. So if we are being shut off from some of this because of the coronavirus, because of restrictions in trade and factories being shut down because of people being ill, we're going to have delays in our own healthcare production.
Well, I've heard even like pork, somehow we bear the pigs here, but then somehow they
go back there and they get pre-made, pre-fab, you know, they get made into a finished product. So the idea that we are so dependent on Chinese suppliers is pretty frightening. So I think this is, you know, something that we need to be cognizant of, because it's their lockdown which is preventing the spread of the coronavirus. It puts industrial production for pharmaceuticals and medicine cabinets at risk of interruption. But it's all, you know, and this is happening because we're now in a just-in-time inventory situation, and that's going to result in drug shortages and lack of availability in coming months. Now, this is happening in the pharmaceutical industry. I talked about Apple, and what's happening now with Apple is part of the reason why their statistics, their forecasts are down, is because their retailers and places in China, which is one of their biggest markets, are not fully up to speed in terms of opening back up again because of all the quarantines with the virus. And I also talked about the movie industry. 70,000 theaters in China have been shut down because of the virus. So with, you know, or temporarily shut down. You know, the more and more China plays a role in our economy, more and more this coronavirus impacts us. So there is a lot more to come with this.
Absolutely. So there's a lot happening on Capitol Hill as well. So today... We have more court time in D.C. related to Roger Stone.
Right. The defense will do a over-the-phone defense of Roger Stone today, and then on Thursday, and some of what is said today will predicate whether the actual sentencing happens this Thursday with Judge Amy Berman Jackson.
Well, you know, Barr and Trump, I don't want to say them both together. I don't think they're colluding together or anything like that. But somehow, you know, the way it works is they're getting to the bottom of this. And if there was ever a case to impeach a really rogue, terrible judge,
yeah,
Amy Berman Jackson's a terrible, absolutely political partisan hack of a judge.
Mm-hmm.
And she's gone out of her way, bent over backwards to destroy the lives of Trump supporters while throwing a blind eye to anything related to the Hillary email scandal or anything else. I mean, the bias is so stark and so apparent, right? So obvious to see what Amy Berman Jackson is made of and what she's about. Of course, she was, you know, she confirmed under the Obama regime. Mm-hmm. But she oversaw this case to where the four prosecutors that served under the Mueller special counsel,
mm-hmm,
these people were, in fact, overseeing this court and colluding with Amy Berman Jackson, which resulted in a jury pool that was tainted. One of the jurors said in the Washington Post that they never were paying attention to anything. They didn't know anything about the evidence. They were like sleeping on the job.
So I don't know what's worse, a corrupt juror or an uninformed juror.
Well, and then there was Tamika Hart.
Yes.
Right? And Tamika Hart was the situation where she was running for office against Steve Cohen in Memphis, Tennessee. And then she was working in D.C. She wrote several posts on her social media that were so hateful to Trump.
She called him Roger Stone. Klan president. That's what she said about President
Trump. She was an absolute racist, a black person who happens to be a racist. They exist, you know, that happens too.
Right.
Reverse discrimination. And in that case, she was a prime example of, you know, someone that just basically hates Trump because of the color of his skin, the color of his hair, and his attitude.
Yet she became the foreman on the trial.
Yeah.
So how did that happen? You know.
So the question that they're asking now is, and it was Judge Napolitano, and by the way, Rudy Giuliani tweeted out that he said Napolitano was right, which I don't agree with Napolitano on a lot these days, but I will say this: Napolitano said, yeah, they could call the jury and the four prosecutors to the stand and find out whether or not the prosecutors knew ahead of time,
mm-hmm,
whether this juror was running for office, yeah, as a Democrat, which is not, that's a big no-no.
Right.
And whether, you know, they were aware of her political leanings.
Yeah.
Which I know the answer to that is yes.
Yeah.
They had to have known.
In this day and age, I'm very shocked that they don't fully vet people, because I was on a jury about 12 years ago, and I remember all the vetting of questions that, you know, that would show potential bias. But that was before we had the level of internet that we have now and the level of information that we have, and social media, and, you know, was still in its early stages then. So I think that there's no excuse for this. There's absolutely no excuse
for
this.
Here's where it's interesting, because one of the prosecutors to a lot of these cases was Jessie Liu.
Yes.
Now, Jessie Liu is a woman, an Asian woman, and she was pulled. She left her post. She left her post to be part of. I think it was either Treasury or Transportation. I'm going to say it's Treasury. But I could be wrong.
It was Treasury.
Was it? Okay.
He intended to nominate her as the top Treasury Department sanctions post.
Okay, so sanctions. That would be right under Steve Mnuchin.
Right.
And because Steve Mnuchin and Wilbur Ross and Lightheiser
would have been the undersecretary for terrorism and financial crimes.
Yeah, that's absolutely where we've spent a lot of effort with sanctioning with Iran and with Venezuela. And with Russia, to probably a different degree, and even North Korea, right? So mm-hmm. and then China was just tariffs and trade. But in any case, so that was a big deal. And what happened was she was pulled from, she was enticed, not mm-hmm. pulled. That's the key. She was enticed. She was offered a wonderful carrot.
Yeah.
And she bit on the carrot. She pulled herself, then she withdrew herself mm-hmm. from the case because she was this person mm-hmm. that wanted to ruin Trump supporters' lives. Mm-hmm. And I guess she thought she was getting the pulling the wool over people's eyes. Right. But she's running. Then she starts to run for the confirmation. She's about to get confirmed by the Senate, or at least mm-hmm. be heard by the Senate in a confirmation hearing.
Right.
And Trump withdrew the confirmation. So now she's out of her role as U.S. attorney, and she's no longer in the process to be confirmed to work
right.
the Treasury job, which a lot of people now are very upset. And so then now you're starting to see people like Andrew Weissman on TV a lot. Have you noticed?
Yeah.
Andrew Weissman mm-hmm. is on TV a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so are a lot of these other prosecutors.
Right.
So then Sundance came out with a new article and a threaded article. And he spoke to this in a rather big way, actually. And so if you follow Last Refuge, mm-hmm. Then you'll find the Sundance article, but the Last Refuge. So he has this tweet thread, and he says, "When did you start hearing about outside prosecutors reviewing DOJ cases? They call it sequester effort." And Technofog was in on this. He's a lawyer, Almost Jingo and Molly Hemingway. They were all in this thread. If you think about the DOJ-FBI process to go back and sequester all of the cases which used evidence from fraudulent FISA, it makes sense that Barr needs outsiders. Per the declassified info from the DOJ-FBI to the FISA court, the DOJ-FBI, after admitting the FISAs were fraudulently obtained, they were going to go look for the fruit of the poisonous tree, the downstream outcomes from a fraudulently obtained warrant. Assuming current DOJ prosecutors, which included the entire Mueller team, used evidence gained from the FISA warrant in their prosecutions, they would hold an inherent conflict in any sequestration search. Barr would need outsiders to review each case and FBI investigation and determine if any evidence within any case or FBI investigation was directly or even indirectly an outcome of original material stemming from the FISA warrant. Now, that's the mm-hmm. seeds from the poisonous fruit. You know, the fruit is poisonous, right? So, I mean, basically, if I, break into your house and I don't get a warrant, and I'm an FBI agent, and then I don't read you your Miranda, how many times has it been that, some dude didn't get his Miranda right. rights?
Well, it's happened.
And he gets let go. Well, yeah. We have to let you go because we didn't read you your Miranda rights.
Right.
Something as technical as that, right? When we know that you did it. And the other one was, if we, all the evidence that we obtain without a warrant is thrown out of court, it's not mm-hmm. admissible in the courtroom. So, you look at things like that, right? Those are very common things. We've known about these things for decades, mm-hmm. Centuries. So it's not new. But what's interesting is they're going to go back and look at all this stuff and everything that, and I'm wondering, why did they do this sooner? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, why now in the 11th hour, just before Roger Stone's about to get sentenced, they're doing it now.
Yeah.
And that's the part that gets me a little bit. But I think Jesse Liu was played. And then you got this other situation going on.
Yeah.
Part of the National Security Council, which was all part of this hoax. And there's several people that are being looked at, like Michael Atkinson,
mm-hmm.
Victoria Coates. Victoria Coates is a mixed bag, in my opinion. She gave a praising great endorsement of Carly Fiorina when Carly Fiorina was going to run as a vice president running mate before the primary season was over for Ted Cruz. But she was Ted Cruz's foreign policy advisor.
Right.
And one could argue, well, so was Kellyanne Conway to that degree.
And she has been viewed as not being in opposition to President Trump.
Jim Hansen, a pundit that I admire, says, I know Victoria Coates personally, and I know that she has nothing to do with the anonymous write-up.
And there is a book. I think I said it said to you off air that the book is coming out. The book already came out in November. The book about Anonymous, and that and what I was going to say with regard the name of the book by Anonymous, the name of the book was A Warning, and the people behind it, the PR agency that are promoting it, Javelin, have all said she had nothing to do with the article or the book.
A couple of years ago, I actually thought it was Fiona Hill.
Yeah,
and you know that's with very limited information. Two and a half years ago, whenever it was. Came out, and it was the use of the word lodestar, though, that had me a little bit perplexed. Now, it could be anybody, and we're supposed to find out who it is, and you're starting to see, though, this shuffling around, like they're negotiating with Victoria Coates to move her to the Department of Energy. We know that the Department of Energy was directly connected with the Ukraine scandal,
right?
And the corruption there, and so the question is she a white hat, a black hat? And if she was a black hat, would you move her to a strategic area like the Department of Energy? Well, if she's cooperating, and so then the other part of it is, if there's an internal investigation going on, you can't touch these people once they're removed from office.
Of course you can't.
And but while they're an employee of the government, they're cooperating. They have to by law. And so you have more control over them. That's why people like Bruce Orr kept their jobs, because there was an ongoing investigation. And that's why also on the flip side of it, someone like James Comey decided not to renew their top secret clearance.
Yeah.
Because then they would not be compelled to cooperate with Horowitz.
Exactly. And again, with Victoria Coates, there's been a lot of talk that this whole thing has been a smear campaign. And there has been an effort to get her out of that department. And now there's a reason to get her out of the department, whether it's real or not. But the fact that she'd be moved over to the energy department versus being fired leaves me to believe that either there's no culpability, or to your point, that they want to have her there for what she knows.
And she is an energy expert.
Yeah,
she's been on the record talking about sanctions and related to Iran and oil types of deals.
But a lot of publications have already come out in her defense. So it's interesting that this is being perceived as a smear.
She's being bandied about. And, you know, one of the other things that you got to look at, too, is that they're just cleaning house with the National Security Council in the White House.
Exactly.
And so some of these people are not bad actors. And so then you have to figure out where you're going to put them.
Right.
Where to best utilize them. And with her, energy is actually a good fit for her.
I
didn't know a lot about Victoria Coates, and I still don't feel like I do. I'm not an authority on Victoria Coates.
She has an interesting background. She has many degrees, but one of which is in art history. So she doesn't have the typical background of a person who'd go into national security capacity.
I don't feel like I have a strong understanding of who she is in this grand scheme of things, but what I would say is I haven't seen any red flags. Mm-hmm. Like I could look at Michael Atkinson. I see red flags everywhere.
Right.
Eric Ciaramella, Sean Misko, Abigail Grace, just their, connections with lowlifes like Adam Schiff, and the types of things they've done. George Kent, red flags everywhere. Mm-hmm. Alexander Vindman, red flags, right? Bill Taylor, red flags. A lot of these losers that were working as diplomats and special counsel, National Security Council, red flags. Fiona Hill, though, is interesting because, and I'm forgetting a good bit of why it was that I was coming to the conclusion 2 years ago that she was the writer of the anonymous op-ed in the New York Times. But I'm going to have to revisit that a little bit. And again, it was so long ago. And that's the problem with this, too, is there's been so much going on. There's been so much scandal, so much corruption. Like, if I continue on with Sundance's article, the last one we read was, in the thread, was Barr would need outsiders to review each case, an FBI investigation, and determine if any evidence within any case or FBI investigation was directly or even indirectly an outcome of the original material stemming from the forbidden tree, right? So there was this guy named Jensen, who is a U.S. attorney from Missouri, and you wonder, okay, Huber's from Utah, and there was a lot of corruption in Utah related to Mitt Romney, Kofor Black, and even McMullen. McMullen and some other folks out there that were related to Burisma, and also, more importantly, to Uranium One.
Yes.
And there was a big contingent out in Utah that was working with not just Uranium One, but how about the guy from Overstock and his connection with Maria Butina? Let's not forget about that.
Yeah.
And they're, you know.
I think his name is Patrick Burns.
Right. And then there was, you know, there's a lot going on there. I could add to this. I could add layers to what I just said, but I'm going to stop right there on that one. You got this other post. It says, considering that encompasses, we're talking about the FBI investigations that were born from the forbidden fruit. Considering what this encompasses, over 3 years of Mueller and DOJ cases involving at least the District of Columbia, D.C., Southern District of New York, the Eastern District of New York, the Eastern District of BA, and Maine Justice DOJ offices. That's a lot of reviewing. The DOJ requested more time, and the FISC deadline response date was extended to February 5th. It's immediately after that deadline that we see media reporting on the outside prosecutors. From the 30,000-foot level, it makes sense there would need to be a team combing through mm-hmm. all these potential cases and then questioning the original prosecutors, which would naturally anger the D.C. prosecutors, including Mueller's team, who were the original users of material now being reviewed for sequester. And they start complaining to their media allies. And so there's this picture of all these different attorneys like Weissman, Van Grack, you know, and mm-hmm. Jenny Ree. There's Michael Atkinson. All these names. Zelensky was a guy that came up, not to be confused with the Ukrainian prime
right,
minister
of course.
Zelensky. But there's a lot of other names we can name that you wouldn't recognize. Zeb Lee, Treblin, Jed, Miser, you know, it goes on, right? There's a whole circle, and they all connect back to Robert Mueller, who, to me, I think Robert Mueller is just one of the most evil men ever to walk the halls of the FBI and was responsible for people dying in jail that should never have died in jail. So then he says this, which explains all the pearl-clutching reporting from the Washington Post, New York Times, and CNN. The spin is sold as Barr interfering with current prior investigations on behalf of Trump. But the reality is that Barr is complying with the original FISC agreement.
Right.
And that's what people aren't understanding.
Well, they're conflating the two. You know, so anytime you use Barr's name in the same sentence as President Trump, people think that there's some type of connection or collusion.
No, but, you know, they're getting to the bottom of it. Because, see, the biggest problem is that the corruption came from the investigators. It's not like these people are machines. They're real people that commit real crimes.
Yeah.
And they cut corners and they have political biases. You're not supposed to have any of that. But clearly, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page did, you know. Lisa Page is, you know, so arrogantly, you know, talking about cheers Andy because Andy got off on a technical, you know, on a lightweight
right.
charge. A lot of people that think that somehow Barr's not doing his job because McCabe got off light on the lying that they're now throwing the book at Roger Stone on behalf of, you know, a process crime, you know, not getting your facts straight with regard to mm-hmm. what was said versus an email documented proof that you what you said was incorrect. That's a processing crime. To get 9 years in prison, virtually at 67 years old, life in prison practically, or at least half your life in prison.
Well, that's the retribution for ever having anything to do with President Donald Trump. I mean, yeah. We keep talking about this. We saw it with Roger Stone. We saw it with Paul Manafort. Anybody who has any association, they're coming after you.
Well, and how about people that never did go to jail or got in trouble? But Michael Caputo comes to mind.
Yeah.
He spent his life savings on attorneys to try to keep himself
out of jail.
Safe and out of jail because they were going for the jugular. That's the biggest problem of all. And again, we got to get to the bottom of this. We got to really put a stop to this. And, you know, so hopefully we will get there. There is another story that's breaking, and I want to get this in before the end of the show today. And that is, again, we have the Roger Stone sentencing, mm-hmm. right? We have Julian Assange. He's going to be in court speaking,
right?
Which is dangerous. And that's going to be within like 4 days or something like that. Then we're going to find out who Anonymous is. We have the shakeup and the NSC within the White House going down from 400 employees to 150 employees. That's a huge cut.
Yeah.
And all the leaking like a sieve is going to end. All those supply chains, all those source information that the media was so relying on in the NSC is going to go the way of, it's going to go kaput. But it gets even better because you still have Durham and Barr, right? And you have Rudy Giuliani. So Rudy Giuliani's coming out with all this information related to Biden. And it's almost as if Team Trump is controlling who they want to take down and when and how and why, because it's so easy. Like, remember when Donald Trump said, you know, I came out too early related to Elizabeth Warren about the Pocahontas thing.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I kind of wanted her to last a little longer. And so now she's starting to rear her ugly head again. But, you know, so it's like that. But, you know, you got to control the timing on all this.
Of course
too.
You do, because there's only so many people you can be fighting at the same time.
Because ultimately you want to win these elections. And, you know, yesterday we had a big show related to, you know, the Electoral College and the popular vote and how that could backfire and so on and so forth. But I think there's so much more to come. There's so much corruption to shake a stick at. And I don't think there's any loss for it. I think that what they're doing, though, is they're using a lot of this prosecution, again, to kind of hold leverage.
Mm-hmm.
So like I have always said about that, you know, one bullet in the chamber, you know, where you have seven people in a room that are trying to kill you.
Yes.
And you have one gun with one bullet. You never, ever really want to pull that trigger, right? Because the other six, you might kill one, but the other six will kill you.
They're going to come after you.
And so you got to, you know, you got to work these things out in a very strategic way, because one bullet's not going to get the job done. And if you have seven bullets, that's a different story. But in any case, so Trump is using a lot of this stuff as leverage, and how you play it out, you know, is interesting. You know, I mentioned often Trump's connection with Sun Tzu, and just yesterday, you know, after our show, Praying Medic, you know, kind of made mention of it. So it was kind of an interesting dynamic that apparently he's listening in on our show.
Yeah.
But there's an exclusive with the Gateway Pundit that I wanted to talk about, and that's confirmed first photos of Deep State's Joseph Mifsud. Everybody thought he was dead. Okay, I kind of did too.
Yeah,
I have to say. And Joseph Mifsud has been spotted, and it says confirmed first photos of Deep State Joseph Mifsud since he went missing, and he just so happens to be with a prostitute.
How to make for a good story.
Italian prosecutors last year reported that notorious deep state spy Joseph Mifsud was dead after he had gone missing for 2 years. Joseph Mifsud is connected to the Obama Spygate scandal after presumably setting up George Papadopoulos and General Flynn in London. What's interesting about this, too, is this. We've talked about Andrew Weissman, that scumbag attorney that worked for Bob Mueller, mm-hmm. right? He's the guy that also took down Arthur Anderson. He's a weasel. And the situation is that I saw a report that indicated, from a good source, that indicated that the $10,000 that was given to George Papadopoulos, mm-hmm. where he then handed it over to his attorney, then he flew to America, and in Dulles Airport, he was shaken down and raided by the FBI, saying, hey, where's the $10,000? Where's that money? It's missing. And they're like, oh, okay, so the FBI was in on this plant of $10,000. Mm-hmm. George Papadopoulos has made this very clear in his book, right?
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that the person that set up the spy to give him the $10,000, yes. as he was also talking with Joseph Mifsud, was Andrew Weissman. He set the sting up to try to entrap George Papadopoulos. So then you got the same guy that's trying to entrap a member of the Team Trump mm-hmm. Campaign, and you're going to then turn around and be the lead prosecutor against Team Trump as a president? Wow. That's how bad this is, right? And Joseph Mifsud figures prominently in this because he was working with the FBI and perhaps the CIA and maybe MI6. Joseph Mifsud is connected to the Obama's Spygate scandal. And remember, we spent a lot of time investigating in Italy.
Yes, we did.
After presumably setting up George Papadopoulos and General Flynn in London. Okay, but it started, originated in Malta, in Italy, and then in London. And Stefan Halper was part of this whole cabal as the deep stater. He also was close to Hillary Clinton and even dined with her in 2016. This is Joseph Mifsud.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But now the Gateway Pundit has exclusive information and photos that prove Joseph Mifsud, the Maltese professor in the middle of the Russian collusion scam, is very much alive and is keeping busy. He's believed to be in Italy, and his guests might surprise you. Now, I don't believe anything happens in this arena, in this world that we're talking about. I don't think any of this happens by accident.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like this guy's life is in jeopardy at all times.
And they're saying that he's under the protection of the Italian intelligentsia, I guess it's AISE the acronym.
So for the past 2 years, his whereabouts have been unknown. Many suspected he was dead. As we noted in February 2019, candidate Trump's unpaid volunteer, George Papadopoulos, stated that he believes he was spied on by the deep state through Joseph Mifsud. This is the same Joseph Mifsud who dined with Hillary Clinton and a group of Italian socialists prior to the 2016 election. As we reported in mid-September, and they're talking about, Gateway Pundit, General Flynn's attorney, Sidney Powell, requested that the U.S. government provide her and her client, General Mike Flynn, documents related to deep state spy Joseph Mifsud. That would be exculpatory evidence.
Right.
Exculpatory evidence that they did not provide. Now, that being said, that's why they're now investigating. U.S. Attorney Jensen from Missouri mm-hmm. is investigating whether or not these prosecutors that were looking into all the Trump members mm-hmm. were withholding exculpatory evidence, whether it be Flynn, Carter Page, George Papadopoulos. So you can just name them, right? All these people were given the terrible treatment. Paul Manafort, Michael Cohen, perhaps. Right. Was there exculpatory evidence, or were they trying to actually withhold the exculpatory evidence illegally to try to do a shakedown and then try to make the pain as painful as possible by saying you're going to go to jail for the rest of your life for 9 years, blah, blah, blah. We're going to throw the book at you. We're going to ruin your life. And we're going to go after your children. If you're General Mike Flynn, they were going to go after his child. Right. He was worried mm-hmm. about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they pulled out all the stops. Simply because they hated Donald Trump. But meanwhile, Tony Podesta, all these other guys on the Hillary scene, they turned a blind eye to the justice there. So they're looking, they have a U.S. attorney looking into all of that. And all of a sudden, Joseph Mifsud comes up, who is working with those people. Mm-hmm. in the deep state. So has Joseph Mifsud finally pleaded and made a deal? We also reported that two of Joseph Mifsud's phones with UK serial numbers are being held by the DOJ. General Mike Flynn's attorney, Sidney Powell, requested that the DOJ turn over the contents of two phones related to Joseph Mifsud. We know now those phones were from the UK, the country that is more suspect than Russia ever was. And so why are we not sanctioning the UK, right? Also, you know, if you ever wanted to hear what Joseph Mifsud sounds like.
Evading the illegal sword.
Told story and again.
Matt then tales. It is impossible.
There was an audio.
There was an audio of that, but I can't get to it. But there is audio of Joseph Mifsud speaking. He speaks like with a little bit of a British accent mm-hmm. and a little bit of a European accent. It's hard to define. So today we have evidence that despite staying under the radar, Mifsud has been keeping busy. In images we received from Yaakov Applebaum, great site, by the way. Applebaum has a WordPress site. Using cyber forensics, there are two girls, Olga Polonskaya mm-hmm. and Natalie Kutubaya Jumron. And so they're Russian girls. In addition, there are sex pics, not with either one of the above, but with two prostitutes. The party took place in his apartment circa 2018, and there's pictures. And so, you know, they got this guy, and this guy is not a good guy. This guy is a shady character on the grand scheme of things. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how these things play out. Naturally, though, you know, if you're the party of Harvey Weinstein and the Varsity Blues and Nexium and Backpage and Hillary Clinton and Pizzagate, well, it's no stretch that you're going to be connected with a guy like Joseph Mifsud.
Yeah, no stretch at all.
Connected to all these things as well. You know, Hollywood in general, right?
Yeah.
It's just full of it. But we want to thank everybody for tuning into the Scott Adams Show. My name is Scott Adams.
My name is Leonora Cravetta.
And we'll see you next time on the radio. Bye-bye now.
Grab a shovel, dig a hole a little deeper.